Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 344. Well, welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. My name is Bob Turillo, and I serve as pastor of Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Countryside, Illinois. And with me, as always, and via the same media, Rob McKenzie. Rob serves as an elder of Westminster. Hey, Rob, how's it going?
Oh, it's good. Yes, our medium of ones and zeros.
Digitally,
as all this is. Ones and zeros. That's right.
Yes, via the internet.
Back
you
together
reside
again.
Reside in your palatial estate, writing books.
Yes.
you enjoy looking out at the frogs as they leap through your moat.
The guard frogs. Thank you very much. Let's get them.
Yes.
They protect me from all of my many enemies that try to invade.
Yes.
My home.
The guard frogs, as they are the poisonous frogs, probably. You know.
Oh, of course, goes without saying.
So yeah, I mentioned I don't know how much writing you've been doing down there, but you do write books. How are those books coming along these days?
They're good. I did the silly task of trying to write two books at the same time, not at the exact same time. That would probably be hard to do.
Yeah, like one hand on a typewriter on this side and one hand.
I'm blanking right now, but there is somebody that could do that. It was handwriting.
Yes, I've seen that before. Someone like they've been on TV. They can write two different things with both hands on a board. And yes. I've seen actually where one guy can do it forwards and another, and he can do it the same hand. He can write backwards. Like,
okay. That's just. I mean, in one sense, wow! Look at the incredible power of the human brain that God has created, and oh my goodness, look at the crazy that is on display because there's no reason why somebody should be doing that. So I've been writing a sequel to Identifying the Seed called Identifying Israel. Mm-hmm. And I'm ramping up, on that. We'll see. My hope was to get it out by this conference, in October.
Reform Forum conference. Okay.
We'll see. Okay. I will push myself to do it, but we will see. It will be close. I doubt if it will be out. It will probably be probably a month away at that time, but I might have some excerpts to hand out or mm-hmm. something like that. My other book, which is a novel, a Christian dystopian novel, I just sent that off to editorial to Ian Wright, who is my editor.
To your editor, yeah.
And I sent it to my English grammar editor
specialist.
who is my wife, and she's got now she's finished with that, and so now I'm making a few corrections in there. Tomorrow.
The staging of editing is a good thing.
Right? Yeah,
you get more than one, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. So then, So that by God's grace should definitely be out by the time, probably in August.
Okay. Does that have a title yet?
Yeah, it's called Acts of Tolerance.
Acts of Tolerance. Okay.
So, yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. And, you've just been, surveying the country, going to plays and...
Oh, that's the high-cultured man that I am.
Yeah, you live your life like it's 1924 and you're high society. That's how you live your life.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate that. No,
Well, I mean, you are wearing a top hat right now.
You're
wearing
top hat. It's called a baseball cap, Rob. It says OPC on it. the old standard OPC hat. I did travel just a tiny bit. I went to visit my daughter in college, and she's at Grove City College, and she's doing wonderfully well there and enjoying college life. And went to see a play there. So there's the culture. You can't take it with you. Which is a Pulitzer Prize winning play from years and years ago. I don't remember all the other details, but it's definitely worth the while. And there's a Jimmy Stewart movie that is based on the play, and that's also enjoyable. I saw that beforehand, which thankfully didn't ruin, the play itself. But
Jimmy Stewart and Lionel Barrymore.
And Lionel Barrymore, yeah.
Together.
So both of those guys were also in It's a Wonderful Life, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it's interesting seeing them both in a different parts, different characters and such, and it's quite enjoyable. It's a comedy with a message. You can't take it with you, the movie. So it's kind of just full of wackiness and basically a good message. So it's all
a lot of explosions. The movie has lots of
explosions. Yes, that's the part you remember. A lot of explosions. So I don't know when it was made, maybe the '40s or fifties, but the explosions of that time period.
Yes.
And then got to visit the Covenant OPC in Grove City, Pastor Jeremy Jones, excellent and congregation, enjoyed the time being there in the fellowship and the Sunday school. One of their elders taught. He's dealing with the first 1,000 years of history, so he taught on Christianity in China in the 600s, which is pretty cool, which is a period I didn't realize there was a vibrancy of a form of Christianity for a couple of 100 years there, starting in the 600s. So, I got an opportunity to preach there, which was enjoyable. And a large student body attends that congregation, which is kind of crazy how many. I mean, it's walking distance, right? You can walk there from campus, right. So it's kind of like that kind of. But there are a lot of other churches that are nearby that you can walk to as well. So it's really great to see, you know, over 100 students gathering for worship at a local OPC church, along with the membership of the church, and them interacting, and that's all wonderful. It's great to meet a couple of listeners, one who stood by the door and welcomed me in and greeted me as a listener, so I appreciate that, brother, and I want to give him a shout out. And keep listening and enjoy the show, and hopefully it'll continue to be a benefit to him and to others. Yeah, it was good. It was good. It was really quick. You know, you drive out 7 hours one day, you drive back 7 hours the next day. So, you know, a lot of people do that, but I haven't done that kind of quick trip in a while. So it's always tiring too.
Yeah, that's a long trip.
So yeah, I got to do that with my wife and daughter and other daughter. So it wasn't just me traveling out there as well.
Oh, Katarina
went.
She drove?
Yeah, she drove. No, no way. No, I was the sole driver. There's a lot of people out there like me that they don't like being the passenger. So it's a motion sickness thing as well as a control thing, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Well, you need to just work on training Tippy to drive.
Well, if the beast could do more than just bark at people and greet them and run after balls, then yeah, that would be great. But that I don't expect much.
She could just pull the car like a Roman chariot.
She is not that much of a beast, Rob. I'm
telling you, because I don't know.
No,
how she fits
we
in your
left
house.
Her home and she took care of the house. So
good.
Yeah, and took care of the person that watched her. Speaking of beasts,
there you go.
There we go, Rob. This is professionalism at its height.
It only took a decade for us to get on the exact same wavelength.
We're still talking about Daniel, right?
We're talking about Daniel. We're talking about Daniel and the Lion's Den, the most famous story ever from the Bible. I mean,
I'm not even going to argue with you because
claymation TV shows have been made. Using Davy and Goliath, I should say, I remember being a little kid watching the reruns of Davy and Goliath.
Davy and Goliath.
The claymation Davy and Goliath. Did you not see this? No. Do you not know this? Oh, yeah.
No,
oh.
Rob, no. These are things that did not come into my world as an Episcopalian growing up. I think those things were only even the dispensational and evangelical world, which mine was not. Mine definitely was not.
I think it was on like PBS or it was
switched off at that time for us.
Could be. I'm sure on YouTube. I've not looked recently, but everybody can look on YouTube and look for Davy and Goliath claymation.
Was there a Daniel and Lion's Den? I mean, you started that statement by saying this is the most famous, and then you moved to Davy and Goliath. I mean, was there a claymation of Daniel?
It was Daniel, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was Davy and Goliath. Yeah, but it was Daniel in the see, there's all these cartoon shows that bad Christian cartoon shows that were on. There was something with Daniel as well, but maybe they did an episode about it. I don't know. It was like the Davy and Goliath claymation was kind of like the VeggieTales before VeggieTales.
Okay. That makes sense.
That gives you an idea of what kind of quality you're looking at. And there's some, VeggieTales has some good silly songs, right?
Oh, Silly Songs with Larry, man.
Yeah.
Some of those are actually very clever.
Yeah. I mean, don't watch VeggieTales for the theology, but the Silly Songs, kind of fun. Yeah. But yeah, so we are on Daniel and the Lion's Den, and we kind of left it off. We had a regime change where Medes and Persians overthrew the Babylonians. And, you know, just before the army comes into the city to capture it, the king makes Daniel third in the kingdom, which, as we talked about, I'm not sure if that's exactly where you'd want to be after, because they kill the king right away. And as normally would happen in these kinds of things, they would say, okay, who's next in charge? And they would just systematically take out the leadership. It's just the way it worked. But yet, not only does Daniel escape execution by the invading army, but we open up with Daniel chapter 6, and Daniel's now one of the top guys in the new kingdom.
Yeah, yeah.
How in the ancient Near Eastern world does that happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you just reading the text gives you a sense of that, right? I mean, there's 120 satraps throughout the whole kingdom. So you have one emperor king, and he needs to make sure that his empire stays together, right? And so you have people trusted in somewhat measure over these. And so you can assume, okay, but there's 120 satraps, you know, little governors, let's just call them. Then there's 120 provinces of some size. But then in between them and the king, there are these three high officials. So there's 120 satraps, then there's three high officials, and Daniel's one of those guys. He's not just a governor, right, of one of the 120 provinces, if that's accurate. We're told it's so that the king might not suffer loss, right? So there's a system set up here by the Persians and the Medes, and they've got this whole way of ordering their kingdom, and it has to do with these three officials, high officials, and that's where Daniel ends up, and that's pretty wild. And in some sense, he became more in some way, right? Well, we know the way. I mean, thinking of it probably just humanly speaking, the authority saw that he had wisdom, he was trustworthy, and they said, okay, let's continue to promote this guy. But we're told in verse 3 that an excellent spirit was in him. And we know that's the spirit of our Lord God who was working with him. We're told that earlier as well in this book. So he became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps. So those are the three high officials. And then he's distinguished above those three in some measure. I'm not sure how you would, you know, how they quantified that or if that did anything for him other than being well known and well trusted by the king. But others don't like that, right? So, literarily, we're given this wonderful setup of how high Daniel has risen within the courts of the king. Once again, right? Just remember, earlier this happens with him and Nebuchadnezzar, and then he is brought up high, and then he is brought to a place of climax in his life where there is more struggle and tension, and that comes directly after we're told about his ascension. We're told about how there's now conflict in verse 4 because these high officials and the satraps didn't like the fact that David is being distinguished among and above all the other high officials. So,
yeah, we're given these two aspects, which are very interesting. That, you know, we're told basically that he works his way up. So he is a good, diligent worker. He's smart. He knows how to get things done. I mean, we see this aspect of him.
He's effective.
Yeah, but it really does bring out that sometimes we get this idea of Daniel that he's praying, and he's at his house praying, and then he's called upon to give advice, and then he gives advice, and then he's rewarded. And I mean, we are given examples of that, but here we see him almost functioning in his everyday job as well, being someone that is over first maybe a province or maybe then a district, maybe a region. So he's working his way. He does actually, you know, as a government official, have a job that in one sense we can look at as a secular job. And then we're also told that there's an excellent spirit in him. Mm-hmm. So the two aspects of his life are shown, that he is working and within the government, and he is also a godly man. And these are the two aspects we're given that help us understand how he has risen so far in this new government. But he's always, no matter what we can think of him, no matter what they thought of him, he's always considered the captive from Israel or Judah. He's always this foreigner, whether he was in Babylon or if he's with the Medes and Persians. That's how he's referred to, because the guys that don't like him and want to get rid of him, that's how they refer to him, and that's how they refer to him to the king. So it was very well known that he was just this captive from Judah.
Yeah, and I actually wonder if that lent him a little bit of movement in the government at first, because say he's not Babylonian, right? He's mm-hmm. not a part of the lineage of Nebuchadnezzar or of the noble house. He's not a Chaldean. He's not native to the empire. He's a captive. So maybe Persians also thought that maybe he was a little bit more trustworthy in the sense that he's not going to rebel because he's not a part of that group. I don't know. I wondered if that lent at least to the king a little bit. I mean, obviously to the rest of them, they became jealous of him. That's the first five verses, right?
Right.
They become jealous of how well Daniel has done, how well the king has distinguished him, has elevated him, how he just appears to do his job so well. Like you said, as we might put it in these terms, right? This is not Babylon, this is Persia now, but this is living in the world. He's got a quote-unquote secular job. Those distinctions didn't exist then, but you know what we know what that means. He's working for, excuse me, he's working for the local government or the national government. We might put it in those terms.
Yeah.
And he's still being consistent with his godliness, being a man of Judah, a Jewish man. Who has shown himself, along with his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to be faithful, not willing to bow down to idols, not willing to only serve or to serve at all the gods of the Nebuchadnezzar, of the Babylonians, and willing to be put to death for that. And so they're shown to be godly throughout so far. And so when we're brought to chapter 6 and we see Daniel, it's like, of course he's going to be this godly man. There would be an inconsistency if he changed his character right now, or if his character changed in any way in the face of adversity. So, and we see that the Lord continues to elevate him. And it's very similar to Joseph, right? If you, you know, remember back to Genesis and how how Joseph there is being used by God to sustain his people. And he's in a foreign land and he works for the foreign government. He works for as a secular leader, being raised up because of the wisdom that the Lord has worked within him. His spirit is, and it's a very similar context, right? I mean, there he's not being, well, he is at first. At one point, he's jailed, right? We're thinking of Joseph now. Right. He's jailed because they forget who he is. And he, is falsely accused by Potiphar's wife. And then he is raised up again later. Similarly, Daniel is accused. Daniel is, and his friends are put into a fiery furnace, and they escape this by God's kind mercies. And so they're lowered, they're forgotten, and then they get raised up again. And we're at another portion in which God is raising up this man again, now with another set of leaders. And now we're going to see a conflict, and we're going to see him put back down again. And so this is, the Lord is just showing us over and over again through how he works in history, providentially, right? These when we call these stories or we call them, see their similarities, we're not in any way bringing into question their historicity. Because God works through history. He's the one who orders this history, and he makes it rhyme. He makes it work together. He makes it, brings parallels, brings foreshadowing, bring all these wonderful things together so that we can see the resemblance in how he works, how he lowers people, brings humility, and how he raises people up to glorify himself and to bring about his end game. And that in the end, of course, will be Christ and the birth of Christ. And but he does this to preserve his people here, right? They've been exiled. Mm-hmm. He chastises his people, disciplines his people by exiling them out of the land. And that's what we're in right now, and in the story, and all of this for the purposes of accomplishing his redemption for his people. You know, there's going to be a restoration. There's going to be the prophets that come afterward. And then the scenario that brings about the Lord being born into this world. So anyway, that kind of brings us off in a different trajectory than I think I intended on going. But
right. Well, we're back. Yeah, that's fine. So I was bringing out how there's this dual aspect of the life of Daniel, and we're going to see in his enemies that they try to destroy him according to this dual aspect. And the first thing they try is his secular job. It's his position within. Now, that's why they're jealous, is that he's risen higher than them, really. But they decide that they're going to try to accuse him of something that he's does, like something in his job that he did that was actually against the Medes and the Persians. The problem is they can't find anything. Is he embezzling money? Is mm-hmm. he lying about the king? Is he causing something that they can look at and say, do you see, he's subversive. He's trying to raise a rebellion. This Jewish, Judean slave that was captured by Babylon, who then became a Babylonian. They're gonna throw out whatever they can. He's nothing but a Babylon loyalist. He was second in the kingdom, or third in the kingdom for Babylon. Of course, they're trying to find whatever they can, but we don't know how long they tried to find something, but in the end they couldn't. He was loyal to the government. He was loyal to the Medes and the Persians. And what we learn about Daniel, what we know about Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that if there was an aspect of the law that they were commanded to do, whether it was in their job or in their personal life, that was in violation of God or violation mm-hmm. of God's commands, they would not do it and they would suffer the consequences. And so whatever Daniel was doing in his day-to-day work was not in violation of a direct violation of God's commands, because he wouldn't have done it. We know that. I mean, we're going to see that, right, in the remainder of the story. But that doesn't mean that there weren't aspects of Medo-Persian Empire that weren't in violation of God's laws or his direct commands. They worshipped false gods. Mm-hmm. That worship system was integrated into their society. You couldn't go to the marketplace without being inundated with false worship. You couldn't walk down the street without seeing signs leading to temples that were to pagan deities. Even though you lived there, they were still foreign pagan deities. And that was what Daniel lived in. And yet he was still faithful to the nation that he was living in what God had called him to do without taking on that guilt.
Yeah.
And I, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's similar to, right, again, back you can go back to Joseph, but then you can also move forward to early Christians who might have been a part of the Roman government. Or soldiers, right? They lived, they worked as a part of that world. And you can't just not live within the world. And that's what we see here again with Daniel. So, and there's lots of debates about, you know, how that works itself out. Can one do this when the government is a pagan government? Well, we've seen throughout history,
right,
that's what God's people do.
Right.
They are maintained by God, even working for idolaters and unbelievers. The government doesn't have to be a quote unquote Christian government for the a church to survive and even prosper at times, mm-hmm. and to work within it. That's not saying anything with regard to our modern debates, but I mean, just to note that is obviously a debated issue. What I'm saying is not controversial, or is not, it's not uncontroversial, but it's just a point of fact, in the past. And we're seeing it here with Daniel in particular.
Yeah. I guess, sometimes what makes me roll my eyes is when I hear people say things like, we live in America and abortions are committed in America, and so in some way we are guilty of that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, no. And abortion is a great evil. It is murder, and we should be against it, and if we have opportunities to oppose it, we should oppose it. But we're not promoting it, nor are we performing it, and therefore we're not guilty of it. And, you know, this is the same thing can be said of Daniel. He was not guilty of the false worship within that society. Now, I'm not, you know, like you said, I'm not trying to get into the modern debates of you know, how we exist within a government, but I think it's unhelpful when we view everything that happens in our society as something that we have to hold guilt for, and so we have to change that. We can change it without, or we can seek to change it without possessing the guilt of it being committed. We should oppose it, oppose mm-hmm. false worship, oppose evils. We should not be silent, because that is the flip side to this, right? Is the church being within a society and not saying, and not actually opposing, mm-hmm. you know, by turning a blind eye to evils that are within the society. I'm a firm believer that the sermons, the Sunday morning services, should be directed toward Christ, and we do not turn them into a political rally. But that doesn't mean that we separate ourselves from the world we live in to the point that we ignore anything that's happening in our society.
Right, right. We're not escapists.
Right, exactly. So these men try to take Daniel down by something in his life that is against the government, but they can't find anything. So they're like, okay, that won't work. Now let's try something that we can do to take him down by his religion,
right?
His devotion to his God.
Right. I mean, just to have it clearly out there, right? No error or fault was found in him, verse 4. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God. Right. So they establish a way of, okay, well, let's make a law that will be contrary to his law of God, to his conscience, so that we can catch him, right? So they have to, that's what they do. And that's what happens in the following verses. Let me read those just because we haven't.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is verse 6 and following. Then these high officials and satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, O King Darius, live forever. All the high officials of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the counselors and the governors are agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it cannot be changed, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document and injunction. So, right, I mean, all right, let's make a law. You can't address, you can't petition any other god other than King Darius, for 30 days. What's wrong with that? Don't pray for 30 days, Daniel, right? Well, this really does, to one extent, show the extent in which prayer is so important to God's people, right? This isn't just something that we do to get stuff, right? Prayer is a communion with our God, and it's an interaction with our God. And the one who doesn't pray to God as a claiming name, the name of Christ and Christian, it doesn't have a relationship with that God, doesn't have a relationship with Christ, because prayer is a part of that relationship. It's the communion, part of the communion that we have with him. And so it's so vitally important for Daniel to pray. And for them to say that he can't pray will violate his conscience. And so he cannot not do this.
Yeah, and they knew him well enough that they knew that this was going to get him.
Yeah. And it's so arbitrary. Is it?
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
It is so arbitrary.
You know, it's this. So the city of Chicago, we're right outside Chicago here.
Yeah.
That's where I grew up. And they just tried to, but they did pass a law within the city that no longer allowed Moody Bible College to send their elementary education students who used to be, because you have to do student teaching. You know, Melody, my wife, mm-hmm. she's a teacher, principal. She had to do this. You go and you do student teaching for several months, and it's a practicum. You're under another teacher. It's just how you learn how to be a teacher. And so Moody has had this sent to all their people into the city. Often they send their teachers to more low-income schools to do their student teaching. But they've been doing this now for 100 years. And the city of Chicago last year, I think it was last year, passed an ordinance saying that the Moody Bible Institute could no longer send their teachers to the public schools because they're religious.
Yeah, because they're Christian.
So here we now, what has changed in the last 100 years? So it was okay for them to be religious up until a year ago. For the 99 years, it was okay, and now the secular world has decided that this is a bad thing. Well, and that's exactly what they decided. They didn't want Christian influence in their secular world. That's what the city of Chicago was deciding. Now Moody to challenge this, mm-hmm. and they challenged it in the courts, and I believe it was last week actually won.
Yeah.
So their teachers can once again. Now, what kind of reception are they going to be given? There's other ways to try to knock them out, but this often is the way the world tries to knock us down, that tries to destroy us, tries to persecute us, and in one sense, couldn't Moody just say, well, you know what? We don't need to send our teachers to the public schools. There's plenty of Christian schools in the area. We can just send them there. They could have said that, but they took a stand. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, this is not, because it's not right what the city of Chicago is doing.
Yeah.
And they challenged it. And by God's grace, now they can, their students can go back to the schools. And this is exactly what's happening with Daniel. it's trying to limit or harm a Christian based on their Christianity.
Yeah, thankfully there were no lion's dens involved, though. So, I mean,
well, that's true. Although there are a couple areas in the city that I would rather be in a lion's den, but that's a different podcast.
Yeah. But I mean, just to follow up on that, I mean, that is one of the blessings of having some checks and balances and with our own government, that Moody could bring a lawsuit against the city, and then the city lost. There are other parts of the world, and to our, you know, our neighbors up north, I think, you know, where they put disadvantage those with consciences against, say, abortion, and so that they can't enter medical fields because they are unwilling to perform an abortion. And so there's a squeeze in some parts of the world, in some nations, some areas where they found ways in which they can keep Christians out of certain professions by saying you must do this in order to be in that profession. And that must do this is a very small part of the field itself. But yet, because of their governmental system, their bureaucracies and such, they're able to do that and take advantage of their system in order to squeeze out those with consciences against certain activities. So, yeah, I mean, so to a certain extent, we're very thankful that we have the ability to have a check and balance with regard to our local politicians trying to push people out. And I think that was very, very much a teachers union thing as well, which has great influence over our local politicians. That's not the case in an empire like, you know, Persia. Daniel has no recourse. The other Jews have no recourse. You know, we're told the story about Daniel. But it's possible that others were affected by this as well.
Absolutely.
That we don't know about, that could have been killed or harmed in some way or mistreated.
But thrown to the lions.
Right. But we're told about Daniel. And Daniel is unwilling to submit to this king's edict, and he suffers the consequences.
Right. He goes, as his custom is, he goes to his house, he opens up his windows, and he prays openly. Well, couldn't he have just kept his windows closed? Would that have been wrong? I mean, we talk about the underground church in different areas of the world, and they meet in secret, and they should meet in secret. Right? I have no problem with that, because if they meet openly, they'll be hauled off to jail. And I always remember the story from Zeki, who talks about, he was in
Eritrea.
Eritrea, and he's the pastor of a church, and they had to meet in secret. And that they couldn't sing, because if they sang, people would hear them and they would call the police and they'd be arrested. And he said that there was always this tension, this buildup with the people of God, that they longed to sing. And he knew when his congregation was ready to face jail, when they said, we must sing. Mm-hmm. And what Zeki they would do is they would meet as the men of the church, because they didn't want the women and children to be arrested. And they would sing, and they would, if that were to happen, then the police would come and they would be arrested. But it was we must sing to our Lord. We must sing corporately to our Lord. And this desire to please God, it becomes secondary. And this is what Daniel's doing to him. It's I will not allow those who are against my Lord to prohibit me from my worship.
Exactly. And you know, the story of Zeki, who's was an Eritrean, now pastor here in the States, in the OPC.
In Atlanta.
And I think they, you know, at first they were singing quietly, you know, and then moved in the direction of we must sing. And we see stories of things similar to that in different parts of the world today. You know, the church in China, has, they in their preaching, don't call out the evils of their government, which I think they don't have to,
right?
But some have, and when they do, they get raided, right? And there's, you know, the question I think that is here for Daniel is, okay, why, right?
Yeah.
Because our prayers are effective whether we are looking out a window or not.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
maybe did he know about the edict? I'm sure he did, right?
I'm sure he did.
So I'm sure lots of different answers have been brought up, one way or the other. I don't have a sufficient answer.
Yeah,
as I mean, to why. I was just reading Sinclair Ferguson and his comments on it, and this is an old commentary that Sinclair Ferguson wrote a long time ago. I think it's in the 80s. I'm very, very, you know, as we all mostly all do, enjoy Ferguson's writing. I really enjoyed his writing on Daniel. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever read Daniel. He's got a few comments here, but you were about to say something. I think I interrupted you.
Well, Daniel, right. We have to do some speculation here as to exactly why he didn't just keep his windows closed. But I think we are given enough to know that this was, Daniel's not said to have done wrong here. Mm-hmm. He's not said to be arrogant. It's not said that.
Correct.
But it just seems as if this is his way of life, and he's not going to allow the king's edict to keep him from worshiping his God in a way that he is accustomed to. And it goes, I think, to the Daniel's faith in the sovereignty of God. This is how I worship. This is how I will continue to worship. And this is more important to me than the any law that man can pass,
right?
Because God is in control,
right? Anything than my life. And you know, and I think we need to, you know, remember Daniel in these times like this. Will we worship the Lord in the assembly of the saints as God has told us to do? Will we pray the way that God has asked us to pray? Will we worship the way he has asked us to worship? Not asked, told us to worship. And I think we need to remember that. And I think, you know, a lot of people during the times of COVID, we were taken aback, a little confused, some less than others, some more than others. And there was some challenging times of discussions with other believers, just, I mean, to say the least. And I think there's people have learned through it. They have grown through it. And I think that's good. And I'm certainly not comparing COVID to Daniel being thrown into a lion's den. But when adversity comes to us and our Christian practices...
I mean, societal persecution is where, the same category as what's happening with Daniel.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is the consequences aren't a lion's den. That's all I'm saying. Whereas with our, you know, like our brethren in Eritrea that we talked about earlier, you know, it's not a lion's den, but it was a tin can in the desert. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's that kind of pressure, fear of life, things like that.
Yeah.
But Ferguson comments on this, and I'm not going to read it all because he actually refers to three features of Daniel being a man of prayer in this context. And the first one is that it was his custom to pray with those windows open toward Jerusalem, just referring to verse 10. The second one is that his prayer life was characterized by discipline and regularity. And the third is that Daniel's praying included both thanksgiving and intercession, which you see in verses 10 and 11. He writes this, referring to John Calvin. He says, John Calvin suggested that it was simply an aid, referring to the window being open, an aid to prayer, and he made the sensible application. Let us learn, therefore, when we feel ourselves to be too sluggish and cold in prayer, to collect all the aids which can arouse our feelings and correct the torpor of which we are conscious. How often Daniel must have echoed the words of Psalm 42 and 43 with their deep longing for the manifestation of God's presence. He may have looked to Jerusalem as a way of reminding himself of God's covenant promises. One of those promises was that God would dwell with his people and make himself known to them. Throughout the centuries, he had done this in Jerusalem. His holy hill was there. Jerusalem was the visible symbol of the kingdom of God that ultimately would never be destroyed. It was the city to which God would once again bring his people. Through the prophet Isaiah, God had promised a new exodus, and he refers to Isaiah 40. So whenever Daniel prayed, he instinctively knelt in the direction of Jerusalem. His mind, his emotions, and his will were focused on the power and the promises of God that were symbolized by that city. And so while we can't say for certain that those are the reasons, Ferguson goes on a bit more, I think there's definitely a sense this is not just his tradition, something he did, but it's something that drew him in his prayers toward Jerusalem, or looking out the window to enliven himself toward the hope of his God reestablishing that connection with his people by bringing them back to the land. And I think we see that the covenant promise is being established and being set before us in the book of Daniel, that draws our hearts and attention toward faithfulness in Jesus Christ. Well, once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us in another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Again, you can find us at reformforum.org. And we do thank you for taking the time to be with us at reformforum.org. There's all sorts of wonderful resources there. Do check it out. But also do go to westminsteropc.org, where you'll find out more about our congregation, the congregation that Rob and I serve. And if you're in town, do come and visit us at Westminster in Countryside, Illinois. Rob, what's up next time?
Well, next time we find out if the lions get to eat.
Well, once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.